Welcome to Wedge Left, a weekly political discussion challenging the mainstream left. I'm Eduardo Barca with co-hosts Andy Lipson, teacher and socialist, and Kenny Cepeda, fellow socialist and community organizer. For folks that would like to find us, they can find us on what-s-left.webno.com. And today we are being joined by Josh Schlossberg. Forgive me for the pronunciation. My English is a second language. And Josh is from the film Planet of the Humans, which we reviewed last week. And we invite everyone, our viewers and listeners, to check out that episode by going on the link in the episode notes. Josh is a writer, investigative journalist, and recovering activist hiding out in the foothills of the Colorado Rockies. He's got a brand new podcast. It is the Green Root Podcast, where he invites you to join him on his quest to uncover the root of the modern ecological crisis. And we will link that in our episode notes. We welcome you, Josh.
Thank you so much. I'm really glad to be here.
Andy, then, will now please give us sort of this connection that was made between you and Josh, if you could.
Yeah, so this is sort of a pleasant byproduct of what's left of doing this podcast that Eduardo and I started literally almost 2 years ago, where Josh, I guess you go by the handle Shitty Activist, which I thought was funny, and just said, hey, it was a surprising, like, good review, you know, like, kind of complimentary, but, you know, he had his own views on it, and I was like, I appreciated that, and I just thanked him. And then he wrote, like, hey, I was in the movie, and he was sort of, like, struck that all the mainstream reviews were, there were problems with them. And he was feeling like ours was, even though he doesn't agree with everything that was said on the show, he thought we had a pretty fair review of the movie in terms of taking up some of the main issues. And I really appreciated that. And when I reached out to him, he was like, the more I learned about you, Josh, the more I was became interested in, I felt like our own journey here is very similar to your journey, but in a different sphere, which I hope comes out in this episode. So I really want to start talking about the movie, but I hope we talk about a lot more today.
Right. Yeah, it's something really just to the people that we have met through this channel, Andy, from when we started, from that radio host to now Josh is also an investigative journalist and the connection because of this film. Let's start off here with the basic very beginning, if we could, because as of the 13th of May, the film Planet of the Humans has been viewed more than 7.5 million times on YouTube, causing an uproar of controversy. Some have said it has been fodder for the right. Others have said it might be dividing the climate movement or demoralizing, quote unquote, and impacting the already anxious young climate activists. And so here on What's Left, we found it very worthy to consider this film because it aligns with our intention for what we do here, which is to have this open dialogue every week and to sort out the sort of controversial issues that we have on the left that we seem to think are, even though they might be disagreeing on the left, they're not necessarily very welcome because of the cancel culture that exists predominantly on the left side. So, Josh, let's turn to you then. So let's just start from the very beginning with this film about Planet of the Humans. What was your involvement or relationship to the folks on the film?
Well, so I knew Jeff Gibbs. He's the writer and director of Planet of the Humans. I knew him from over a decade ago. I was the organizer of a national campaign to call attention to health and environmental impacts of biomass energy. So it was through a group called Energy Justice Network. That was a group that was mentioned in the film. At the time of the film, I was a part of that organization. And we worked with communities across the country who were mostly fighting biomass facilities that were being proposed in their communities. So Jeff was working to fight a facility in the areas that he lived in. I believe it's Michigan. I forget specifically the towns. There were four different facilities, but they shut them down, basically. They prevented those from moving forward. And so he was engaged that way with just the network, and he was providing some information to folks who were still dealing with new proposals. And at some point, he mentioned that he was going to be putting together a film that brought biomass into it, though he wasn't really 100% clear, I think, even at the time, what the film was actually going to turn into.
Oh, when was that? When that?
Well, I believe the segment in which I was included, where I'm talking about biomass energy in front of the McNeil Biomass Facility in Burlington, Vermont, I think that was about 8 years ago, I believe. I'm much better groomed now, as maybe not today, but in general. And yeah, so that was about when it happened, and I knew he was going to do the film. He did this segment, he recorded it. I kind of forgot about it.
They claim they're just using forest residues, but actually a great deal of what the McNeil facility and lots of biomass facilities burn is whole trees. As you can see by this pile that's stacked right outside of the facility, these are trees.
It turns out that the biggest source of green energy in Vermont is something called biomass, burning trees to create electricity.
This is definitely not the way, and that the first step is actually looking at our lifestyles and how we can reduce our energy consumption. This is all the ash that has varying levels of toxic metals, a great deal of radiation, because these trees have been absorbed. Oops, there's a...
You're in unforbidden territory here.
Are we?
I asked both of you to come up to our okay?
Is that something you're interested in doing?
It's not an interest. You got 5 seconds or I'm calling 911.
Okay.
We've got two individuals here. Police will be down here in about 2 minutes.
So you asked us to leave and we're doing so.
I'm not asking you to leave. I'm asking you to come up to the office.
Okay. Thanks for the offer. Maybe next time?
You got everything here. So you have the number one polluter in the state that people think emits magical fairy dust from the smokestack. The reality is what you have is a facility that burns 400,000 green tons a year of trees. Now, this facility burns 30 cords of wood per hour.
That's a hell of a lot of wood.
And on top of that, it actually burns natural gas as well.
And to think you would have to have 10 of these to replace one average coal-fired power plant. You know, it's just not going to work.
It's just nuts. It takes a great deal of fossil fuels to cut down all of these trees, to truck them in, to use the big machinery to dump the wood chips everywhere. So the idea that somehow this is not anything to do with fossil fuels just doesn't even make any sense. It couldn't happen without fossil fuels, in fact.
How did the environmental groups get pulled into this?
Obviously, the main factor is delusion. A lot of these environmental groups have been saying that all we have to do is, for instance, you know, switch our fossil fuel economy over to a few solar panels and windmills, and we can continue living life, you know, as normal. Some of the environmental groups have been for years touting facilities like this, saying that, you know, number one, it's carbon neutral, that this will actually help us fend off climate change because there are no CO2 emissions. It actually emits over 400,000 tons per year of carbon dioxide. Oh, but once we cut them, they'll grow back. They'll grow back over a period of decades to centuries. But if we cut every tree in the United States, it would be able to power the country for a year, you know, and then what happens when, you know, the trees are gone?
And for various reasons, it took Jeff a while to put the film together. I don't think that's necessarily a negative thing. I think it's basically the last 10 years of the environmental movement is what this is basically encompassing. Luckily, everything I said at the time is exactly true today, even to the amount of CO2 being emitted from that facility. So biomass energy definitely hasn't changed much. Mm-hmm. But that was basically sort of how I got engaged with that. And then over time, he mentioned it a couple other times. He was going to do some other filming of some other segments out here in Colorado because I moved out to Colorado from Vermont and I was looking at some biomass facilities here. There's some clear cutting that goes on for this one facility in Colorado. And then he didn't end up doing filming for that. And then, yeah, I guess it was over the fall. He's like, oh, we're showing the film at this film festival. And basically he said, we'd love to fly you out if we had the funding. I was like, that's all right. I'm probably not traveling anywhere anyway. And then come, what was it, a little over 2 weeks ago, he sent an email and said, the film is up on, we're putting out on YouTube for Earth Day. We're getting out this way for the next 30 days, and then we'll figure things out later. And I was like, all right, let's see if I was an idiot in this film or not. It's up to the public to decide, I suppose.
What were your thoughts when you saw the whole movie? What did you like about the movie? What were your criticisms, if any?
Yeah, so I thought it was a really well done film. So just speaking artistically, I thought, you know, it holds your attention. The narrative was really interesting. You know, there is a lot of the us versus them, which frankly, I write fiction. You got to have that in there. People don't watch a movie that doesn't have stuff like that. I thought that was interestingly done. I thought the imagery was spectacular. I think the way that he framed the different components was really interesting. And yeah, altogether, I thought it was just a very well-made film. If you just take the information and the subject matter out of it, accessible to the public. And then going beyond that, the fact that it was critiquing the mainstream environmental movement with the platform of Michael Moore that is what's phenomenal to me. I learned a few details from the film, but yeah, this is stuff that I and others have been working on for years. So it wasn't like, oh, I didn't know, you know, that there were impacts to and limitations to alternative energy. I've been aware of that. But I was mostly like, wow, this is going to rock a lot of people's world. And it has to a large degree. If I had any specific critique, I mean, we'll get into it in a minute. I feel like a lot of the critique out there just doesn't hold a lot of water. The fact that it did take a while to film obviously made it so some of the stuff is a little bit, in regards to some of the technology, it's slightly outdated. It's really not as much as people are making it out to be, and in some cases, it's not at all outdated, and for the most part, that's sort of irrelevant to the message of the film. But, you know, that's the difficulty of, you put together a film that takes a while, and something that's ever-changing like the energy industry and energy technology. I mean, if I wrote an article, if I was working on an article today that I put out in 2 weeks, some stuff would be outdated, you know. And a film takes forever to make. As somebody who's written novels, none of my novels have been published, so don't bother looking for them. But my short stories have, but that's a whole other topic. It takes a while. It takes a while to put stuff together. So I wouldn't say it is a critique of anything Jeff did. I would just say it's a critique of chronological time.
I was wondering about that when you said that it takes a while. A lot of this commentary that is coming from folks that are criticizing it are saying that some of it needed to be updated.
That's what people are saying. Again, you can say that about everything that comes out, whatever medium you're using. You can always use that as a reason. Oh, it shouldn't have come out. You know, it's not really a fair assessment, and I don't think it's coming always from it's coming from slightly disingenuous place, because I have looked into since then some of the claims that have been made, and I don't have all the numbers off the top of my head or anything like that, but people are exaggerating about how, quote, outdated it is. Basically, they're talking about a couple details here and there. Still, that's at least part of the legitimate critique insofar as you can say, oh, now this is the case when it wasn't the case in the film. At least that's a true statement to make. But to say that invalidates the whole film, or that it's therefore the filmmaker's lying, sorry, but that's, I don't know if you can swear on this, but that's BS.
Yeah. And you had told me that you felt there was many of the mainstream environmental groups were disingenuous in their critique. Can you talk more about what some of those groups are and what you, like, why you felt it was so, not just unfit, well, it might have even exposed them in making the critique.
Well, I mean, obviously, the fact that the movie is giving a black eye to mainstream environmentalists they're not going to like it. So, I mean, it's set up in a sort of antagonistic way where they're going to respond negatively. So that's to be expected. But, yeah, there's been a lot of tricks that have been employed in regards to the responses. I mean, first of all, off the bat, the vast majority of the responses have been from the alternative energy industry. So I don't really consider them that the environmental movement. That's the environmental movement basically has become advertising for that industry. And I'm not even saying it's always a bad thing, but that's the case. So let's extract, that's a term used with a lot of energy. Let's extract the arguments made from people in the solar and wind and biomass industry separate from the environmental groups, which even though a lot of it overlaps. So that's a lot of it. In regards to specific names of environmental groups, most of those environmental groups have been somewhat silent about this. A few of them that were named in the film, 350.org, they put out a kind of a statement. Most of it has just been, you know, the individuals who are a part of that. And I do want to say before going further, I don't think that pretty much any of the individuals in the mainstream environmental movement are bad people. I think a lot of the times they're actually doing very good things. They're almost all well-meaning. To me, it's more the issue of a lot of what these organizations, which are funded by large foundations, which get their money from corporate endeavors, largely energy industry. So, I mean, what do you expect, really? The individuals behind it are definitely well-meaning. You know, it's like a love the sinner, hate the sin. I'm not a religious person, but that's the saying from Christianity. It's like, you're not like bad person. You're like, oh, maybe that's the thing that you did that's not very good, but you're redeemable. Unfortunately, a lot of the environmental movement was given the chance to redeem itself with this. It's not, but that's the mainstream environmental movement, and they're becoming increasingly irrelevant in terms of actually making progress. They're most of what's heard, because that is what most of the media, the legacy media, and then also most left-leaning advocacy media is going to prop up what they have to say. And they're largely, mainstream environmental movement is largely an arm of the Democratic Party. I'm not somebody who's ever voted Republican in my life, and I probably never will. I don't vote Democrat anymore either. But yeah, they're less bad, fine, if that's enough. But it's not. You know, I'm not going to get into the specifics about which groups per se, but the gist of these arguments is there's a variety of them. So we can start from some of the just nonsense ones that immediately, I would say, makes the individuals who are making these arguments completely lose all credibility. Do you want me to go into some of that? So I've written a piece. I'm shopping it around right now. I'm just referencing it because I can put my thoughts in a place and remember what I was about to say. I just started pitching it this week because I just wrote it. So I'm not sure where it'll be published. But some of the ideas I've encompassed in that. But so some people are saying the film is it's climate denial, right? It's this climate denial. The whole film is predicated on the whole notion of a climate crisis. Like it's like implicit in the narrative. It's everything about the film is not just that there's a climate change, but it's a big deal. And in fact, some people, you could say that it's a more radical view of climate change. Basically, Gibbs has the runaway climate change that all of the planet, or at least all humans, would be, you know, potentially perish from it. I don't even know if that's true. I definitely believe that climate change is very, very serious. So that's if anything, like a radical environmental view, certainly not climate denial. Anyone who says it's climate denial, they didn't watch the film or their statements are just invalid, just across the board. There's, you know, you can be wrong about things and still have other points. If you say that about this film, no credit. Saying that the film is advocating for fossil fuels. Again, the whole narrative is fossil fuels and climate change, but that's what people are saying. And false, the end of that discussion. I love engaging people on stuff, but that blows them out of the water. Then it's the idea that because some conservatives or right-wing media, which has been some of the only media that's really covered this film, because they're salivating over certain aspects of it, that therefore it's a right wing film or it's feeding stuff to the right wing. Here's the thing. Obviously, folks, they love that kind of that left eating the left meme, even though those of us who are inside of the left, who critique it to improve it, we know that that's a BS argument. Mm-hmm. So the way I look at it, it's like, if you're a lifelong Democratic voter, and then say you're not that into Joe Biden and you get critiques, oh, therefore you want Trump to get elected. That is a very fundamentalist way of thinking that is pure nonsense. And I don't even know if the people who are making that argument really believe it. It's just an easy way to cast shade at the film. So, of course, when you're like, hey, parts of the environmental movement, you can do better. People who don't like the environmental movement are like, look, the environmental movement's getting a black eye. So what? Sorry. Mm-hmm. So that's a piece that I think is really not legitimate. A weird one is that because there's a critique basically of it's the shadow side of alternative energy, right? So it does focus primarily on what's negative, mostly because 99.99% of what we've heard is that it's positive. Personally, I'm not opposed to solar and wind in the right circumstances. I actually think it can be a good thing in some circumstances, but I want to be honest about its impacts and factoring that into the equation. So the idea that, well, if you poke a little bit at an issue and you point out its shadow side, therefore the whole thing is garbage. My theory is that's what the left tends to believe about a lot of stuff. They're like, oh, yeah, that guy said he said a bad thing once 15 years ago. Everything he says is garbage forever.
Yep.
And so they have that mindset. It's like a fundamentalist mindset. And then what that makes it – so in their mind, they're like, okay, so something is a little bit bad. The whole thing is bad. Therefore, I can only believe in things that are 100% pure. I believe solar and wind are good. Oh, they're saying that it's slightly bad. Well, if it's slightly bad, then I'm a garbage person too, and I'd have to, so that's kind of what I think the thinking is. That's a very flawed way of thinking. Mm-hmm. So I think the idea that the film says, the film came out and told everyone to never have another solar panel and wind turbine. I've rewatched the film a few times, even after the criticism looking, it never says that. The worst that's said is, Ozzie Zanner, so he's in the film, but he is a producer. He wrote the book Green Illusions, upon which some of the film is based. He's kind of like the youngish guy who stands in front of the solar places and stuff. He said at one point about one of the facilities that was a hybrid, gigantic solar and natural gas facility that you might as well just burn the fossil fuels. Now, I think he was probably being hyperbolic, just like, well, we should probably kill him then. He wants to commit murder. It's like you're deliberately misunderstanding that. But and if Ozzie does seriously mean that, maybe in that case of that facility, that might be true because it's a giant facility that's not that efficient. It certainly would not apply to the whole film. And it's weird to take like one thing and then be like, bet all 100 and, an hour and 40 minutes, it's like that was like a second of words. Mm-hmm. So weird. And then I really dislike the – now this is a difficult topic, and I know you folks spoke very gingerly about it on the podcast because I think this is an area that needs to be navigated carefully, the issue of population, but it's really population times consumption, and that was – what the film did say. It did bring up both of those. Obviously, in the developed world, people's consumption is far greater than consumption in the developing world and population. So it's more about, one person in America is consuming more than, however many in another country. So that's, but we do need to be able to at least bring that into a conversation about environmental issues, whether it's the root cause or not, I don't necessarily think it is. But to say that talking about that issue means you are advocating for eugenics and therefore you're a racist, that is just a silencing tactic. And I know certain actual racists do use the population argument. That is true. but that doesn't mean everyone who mentions the P word is a racist. And frankly, if there's accusations of eugenics for mentioning population, that's somebody that I don't have a conversation with. You can say there are some problems with bringing up that issue. Of course, it's a very difficult issue. But so those are some of the most absurd talking points, which are a surprising amount of them out there. But those are the ones that if people bring that up, I would say it's not even worth reading the article or listening to that podcast or that video if that's the accusations that are made. And, you know, that's typically what these, you know, I guess they got to do a clickbait, but it's just like, why the film is racist? You know, because having a nuanced conversation of, well, why talking uncautiously about population could enable racism, that's too long a headline.
And I want, if I can just follow up on some of the things that you had, some points you had just said, Josh.
Of course.
What I suppose then is just a guess, or what you think might be the reasons why prominent figures like Naomi Klein have come out against the film. I understand why Bill McKibben might come out, in which I thought these folks were sort of, Michael Moore, Bill McKibben, were sort of in the same circles. But I understand why Bill, he was clearly named.
Right.
But Naomi Klein, why would you think her response was out there saying that this isn't it, this film isn't it to criticize or to have this controversial debate about the green energy movement?
Yeah, well, I would say, you know, basically going into a little bit more legitimate criticisms, or at least so far as based, I think that they're being genuine in their beliefs when they say they don't like at least aspects of it. I still think they're, you know, tarring it with the same brush, if that's the phrase. But so folks like, I don't recall specifically what Naomi Klein said, but I did look at some of her stuff. Basically, she's just backing up Bill McKibben and saying, you shouldn't say mean things about people. But it gets into what I really feel like is most of the mainstream environmentalists' issue with the film. And it's not necessarily, you know, the points that I made there. It is partially the solar wind stuff. So that's not it. But to address that, like a little bit more of the legitimate critique, they feel like, okay, the climate is a very important thing. We all agree with that. So their answer, the only thing they got is, let's plug in solar and wind. So that's, they're afraid that anything that would suggest that alone is not an answer is going to derail that movement. So I think that they just, it's a classic left thing where it's like anything that might appear as if it's from the other side, you can't do it because people are not smart enough to be able to think through these nuanced points, and we're just going to derail the whole movement. I think that's kind of silly, and I don't think people are that stupid, frankly. But yeah, they put a lot of their eggs in that alternative energy basket, and anything that makes it harder for them to just communicate that message, or I think that undermines their own beliefs about it, is very uncomfortable to them. And you know, when you believe something long enough, it's a very difficult thing to change your beliefs. People don't want to admit when, not necessarily that they're wrong, but that their views have evolved. It's kind of like, it's why a lot of times police officers will never acknowledge that they did anything wrong. It's because it maintains this element of authority if you never admit you did anything wrong. Of course, if you always say that you're right, you know for a fact that you're going to be lying at some point. No one is right all the time. So I don't think that they don't want to show any chink in their armor in the mainstream environmental movement. And this does show a chink in the armor. And solar and wind as the answer to climate change alone, it's not cutting. And they know that. It's probably part of the solution. And it's so weird that they didn't just be like, you know what? We get it. we are going to advance more with the other aspects of what we're looking at. But the reason that they ultimately can is because the film gets to the heart of what I believe is really the issue. And it is our economic systems. And I know you guys talk a lot about socialism versus capitalism. And I agree that is a component of it. But I do think that there's something underlying all of that. And that basically is lifestyle consumption. It's all a part of it. It's not one or the other. Our economic system does encourage more consumption. There's no question about that. But it doesn't just exist. Walmart wasn't just built and then forcing people to buy their crap. It's filling a certain demand to a certain degree. So I do think there's some underlying aspects that really need to be challenged there. But the mainstream environmental movement can't do that. They can't talk about consumption or lifestyle. They can't even really talk about economic systems other than saying half-heartedly that they don't like capitalism, but they don't, you know, really suggest that they have another plan. But if they're asking people to change behaviors, if that's really what it comes down to, they're going to lose their membership, number one. And Naomi Klein is going to lose her readers. Because you want to read a book and be like, I already knew this and I'm already doing it. That's good night. You know, you close the book and you feel good about yourself. Versus just like, oh, shit, I got to do something differently and really think a lot more deeply about my role in the world. No, thank you. I'm not going to buy Naomi Klein's next book if she's making me do homework. And I think a lot of what Naomi Klein has to say is good. Unlike other leftists, just because I critique an individual does not mean I think they're all garbage. I also think that the corporate foundation aspect, that's where the foundation funding comes from. And then because it ties into the Democratic Party. So right now, what is the big savior? Is we're going to get the Democrats in. I remember when the Democrats were in and then the Republicans and the Democrats. Democrats are a little better on the environment, but not good enough. So no thank you. But now the big hope is the Green New Deal, which I don't know a ton about because enough people were writing about it that I didn't bother writing about it. But that's just kind of a vague plan, and it is largely about just having a bunch of alternative energy sources, including, unfortunately, opening the door for more nuclear power, which I'm not a fan of personally, and biomass. So that's their thing. Don't derail the Green New Deal. Don't derail the Democrats. One thing that makes them really look different from the Republicans, don't get Trump reelected. So I think all of that is tying into this. And some of the folks have said, this is just handing Trump the election. It's like, it doesn't even mean anything. Like, the voters are not going to go towards Trump. Come on.
Yeah. Or the point to Breitbart having supported a lot of what the film had mentioned.
Right. Well, Breitbart supports like 3 minutes of the film. They support a critique of alternative energy, not because they want to advocate for the status quo of fossil fuel infrastructure. And then they like that the left critiques the left. So, and then you read all of these right-wing or even just somewhat conservative media elements, and then they're like, but the message of the film, which is basically 90% of the damn film, which is a deep ecology, biocentric, environmental message, of course they oppose that.
I'm a little curious as to, you know, you were talking about change and, you know, changing ideas and evolution. I'm curious about your personal journey, you know, as to where you've been and, you know, where you're now and how you've, you know, reached the point you're at the moment.
Well, I mean, a very short version. If you want a longer version, you can check out Green Root Podcast, which I just started up, and what my first episode, I talk about why I'm doing the podcast and I give like maybe 40 minutes of my history. I'm not going to subject you to that, obviously. But let's just say I cared about the woods when I was younger, and then I became an environmental activist to work on forest protection issues. I worked on a whole range of environmental and social justice issues going door to door for, you know, gay rights to, people of color in other countries, you know, like feed the children kind of stuff, to all sorts of environmental issues. So I was involved with all that stuff, and I started working more and more on that forest issue, and I was actually hired on by organizations to do that kind of work and all sorts of rallies and even, you know, behind the scenes sort of direct action stuff to media work to, you know, mainstream to radical, kind of across the board I was doing it. And I was celebrated for it, as in I was living in Oregon where they really respected activists, particularly for forest issues. So me speaking out about protecting forests was it was almost a mainstream thing out there, even though a lot of it was around critiquing some of the mainstream environmental groups who were kind of not as strong on forest issues. But I was working on all those issues and you know, in the media all the time, and people were just always praising me, which, you know, obviously felt good for my ego, but just like, all right, I'm on the right track and people are into this. And then a friend of mine who I was working with, he was also a mentor of mine, his name is Shannon Wilson, with a group called Eco Advocates Northwest. He called my attention to biomass energy, as in cutting trees down for energy as the new threat to the forest. So I came at that solely from the forest issue. I'm like, well, what's the new threat to the forest stuff? Let me take a look at this. And then it opened up this whole can of worms with climate impacts, health impacts, you know, there might be some uses of it that are less bad, but overall it probably does more harm than good. And even down to a wood stove, I used to burn wood all the time. Not saying people shouldn't do it, but there are impacts. We got to be aware of the impact. All of a sudden I started talking about this issue. People started looking at me askance and they're like, go back to the other stuff. They didn't like me talking about this, and I couldn't figure out why. Well, it didn't take me very long to figure out why. Basically, I realized the Democratic Party was the biggest push for biomass energy because that was their best bet at meeting a renewable energy target in hopes of doing something about climate change. Of course, the science that we all know now, or most of us know now if we look, but those of us who bothered to look back then knew, is that burning trees to protect the climate is actually the opposite of something that's helpful. Forests are doing all of this work on their own. But I started to not only get like weird looks, I started being shunned. I started being slandered, censored. People were going after my funding. I ended up moving back to Vermont for various reasons, and I was working on the issue there where a lot of new facilities – I come from the Northeast originally – and I was working on the issues there, and the same things were following me across the country. There were a handful of people who I called, you know, legit environmentalists who were like, yeah, this is not a good thing. And then some communities who were trying to organize around this. But we had to fight the mainstream environmental groups, the Sierra Clubs, the what have yous, who were all advocating for this stuff. Some of them behind the scenes were talking to me like, you're right, but we're not going to say that you're right. I was in Vermont, and this is not hyperbole when I say that I was literally the only person in the state of Vermont who was working as an environmentalist who was critiquing biomass energy. We had some folks who were out of state that were working on that, and, you know, some people came around eventually, but it was just me. And, yeah, Bill McKibben was advocating for it, and a lot of the reason we couldn't get any traction is because the big environmentalist Bill McKibben, who I have a lot of respect for a lot of the stuff he's done, and I've been in communication with him over time, including recently, but people would just be like, well, if he's in favor of it, then sorry, you're a nobody and your stuff is nothing. And that really woke my eyes up to how far afield the environmental movement had gone. You know, not only were they just like, yeah, we don't care about this, but we're going to try to shut you down. And that was a big wake up call for me.
And how would you describe your values now in terms of the environmental movement and the environmental movement? Where would you say, where were you, and where do you see the solutions now?
Well, that's a big question. The solution, I don't know. I don't know. My shift, and this might answer the question though in a way. So my shift was, I was an activist, and I think activism is great. I started turning into a advocacy journalist. So basically most of the left-leaning journalism we see today is advocacy journalism, you know, like everything in, I don't want to name any of the places, but you know what I'm talking about. It's all pretty much advocacy journalism. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. So I was doing that on the biomass issue. I was like, I'm going to stop just being an activist on this. I'm going to write about it. I created a publication, which we ended up calling eventually the Biomass Monitor. And I started to, you know, first just like, here's all the negative impacts of biomass. Basically like what Jeff did in the film. I'm just going to focus on what's negative, but 100% backed in science and 100% truthful. Then over time, I started shifting and like, well, why don't we get a whole discussion going with even the people who love biomass or who think some of it, you know, personally, I think pretty much all of it does more harm than good, but I'm like, others don't, and let's have a conversation. So I actually ended up creating this space where I would get people from the timber industry, you know, big people in the timber industry and biomass advocates to write op-ed pieces. I do like pros and cons. So it's all in one place. So because the media was useless about that. So let me do that myself. And then that was transitioning me into being a legitimate journalist. So I eventually became an investigative journalist and was still writing on biomass and a few other issues. But basically through, you know, my disillusionment, I guess, with being not environmental activism as a whole, but just the difficulty of doing legitimate activism in a kind of swamp of just silliness, I was like, let me do something else instead. Let me put all this information in one place. It got me thinking differently, as in, well, let me consider other viewpoints. Let me at least put it all in one place and let people decide. I don't have to be the arbiter of what is right or wrong here. I know what I believe. And the truth is my values haven't changed hardly much at all. But my engagement has changed. I don't see the people who I disagree with, even Koch brother, whoever's still alive, as the enemy and a bad guy. I really don't. I think in some cases he's doing some bad things. In some cases, probably doing some good things. In almost all cases, he probably thinks he's doing good things. That muddies the water a little bit. You can't just make people into villains. And ultimately, if you really want to change people's mind, you know, it's like you don't have to give up your own values or your own views, but like befriend that person, you know, legitimately be interested in where they're coming from. You know, think of them as like, if you think of your sister or your brother who has a view that you think is stupid, you're not like, oh, that piece of shit is he's garbage forever. You're like, oh, that's just, you know, Johnny. Johnny's cool, but Johnny's a little off on that. Maybe over time, Johnny will, you know, change his views, or if not, I still like hanging out with Johnny. So that's kind of more my view over time. And interestingly, I found I've actually been way more effective in getting folks to sort of see a little different perspective, because they're like, oh, Josh is an environmentalist and kind of a hardcore environmentalist, but he doesn't think I'm evil incarnate, and he's not a dick about it all the time. Sometimes I'm a dick. So that, I would say, is the evolution of my thinking on it. But what's funny is I'm coming back to an element of activism right now, because journalism, so I started doing it, and I started doing really well. I was able to freelance for, I don't know, 40 publications, I don't remember. But I found out almost all the editors and publishers are all ideologues. And as my journalism got better and better, like pure journalism, where I'm really trying to get all these different spectrum, I realized that all journalism had morphed into, or always was, just activism. So before I was too much of an activist to be a legitimate journalist, then I became too much of a legitimate journalist to do journalism. And that sounds like I'm tooting my own horn, but read my stuff. You know, joshlossberg.net still has some of my articles up. I was legitimately trying to get all the perspectives out there. And I write for places and they're like, yeah, do you need to talk about that? Basically, they just wanted me to toe their line. Yeah. I won several awards despite it. But the better my writing got, the harder it got for me to sell my articles, because I was not just writing propaganda anymore. Mm-hmm. So recently, I'm like, I do a few other things on the side, so I'm doing okay. But I the pandemic got me thinking about activism again, because I've actually been writing about disease and zoonotic diseases for a while in my journalism and also in my horror fiction. Check that out. That's, I won't even confuse your viewers with that. But I've been focusing on that for a while, and then the pandemic hit, and I was like, oh, shit. And I was like, maybe it is time for a little bit of environmental advocacy that ties into, you know, the disease world, as in prevention of a pandemic through understanding about food sources and environmental destruction, and then our technology, which spreads it around the world, and then, you know, air pollution also ties into disease, so that could be power plants. So I was already thinking about that, and then the film came along, and, you know, like somebody was saying to me, it's like, well, now you have a bit more of a platform. What do you want to do with it? I'm like, I'm not going to do anything with it. And then I was like, well, I was already thinking about because of the pandemic stuff. And so, yeah, right now I'm doing this, starting a podcast and just starting to have more conversations where I'm actually talking about my opinion. The last several years, I took my opinion out of it. That activism was all my opinion. And I'm like, journalism, I know my opinion. I'm going to use my opinion to at least frame my understanding of the world. But then here's somebody who says something that I think is fucking stupid. I'm still going to put it in the article as in the best light that I possibly can, because that's the intellectual exercise of legitimate journalism in my mind. And but now I'm like, now I'm just going to, well, I wanted to write about Planet of the Humans, but because I'm in it, you know, my 3-minute starring role, I obviously couldn't do a legitimate journalistic endeavor on it in terms of purely objective, a bit of a conflict of interest. So it gave me an occasion to be like, well, here's, if any, a time to just be opinionated. And so that's why I'm now talking about this issue, and then I have the Green Root podcast where I want to continue with these sorts of discussions that folks like you are having on a variety of topics. I'll probably just compartmentalize it to a certain degree about environmentalism, but I don't believe that that can exist in a vacuum.
Well, one of the areas we talked about on the phone when we talked was you also talked about how you had really, because here we talk about what's left and trying to rebuild a left. You had some critiques and a sense of direction around that, or at least an analysis around that. And it came out of your experience in the environmental movement. I suppose you also have some ideas about what you would say about media and what the role of the media is. Can you say something about that? Like, you know, what you feel like you learned about what it's going to take to rebuild a left, or what a stronger left. And I'm not sure you even agree with the left-right paradigm, but maybe just do your best to kind of, I'm sort of kind of speaking back to that time when we were talking on the phone about your experiences there.
Well, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, I was touching a little bit on this psychological concept of spiral dynamics. Okay, so definitely not going to get into that really in depth, because that is a very complicated thing, but I do want to mention it and encourage others to look more into it. Basically, it is a psychological framework of just the different lenses through which we view the world. You can look at it as biopsychosocial development. Just look at it through the lenses through which you view the world. So George W. Bush and Barack Obama. Like, obviously, there's a lot of similarities, and let's just take out the fact that they're all presidents and have to, like, put hits out on people. Would you acknowledge that they view the world through different lenses to a certain degree? So, to a certain degree. So, you know, a trucker in the heartland who likes his Coors, I don't know what the Coors might be, even too bougie. Whatever. I'm obviously a beer snob because I can't. Terrible. But a trucker in the heartland versus a San Francisco BuzzFeed editor have very different lenses through which they view the world. Now, neither one is better or worse than, but a lot of the times they can be narrower lens. Nothing wrong with a narrow lens when you got to look at something. And then there's a broader lens of inclusion. And sometimes a broader lens is not the right lens. But to make this very simple, we can look at things egocentrically. So it's just me. I'm focused on me based on my life conditions where I need to focus on me. And then there's a point where I'm looking at my group. So it's like, you know, my town, America first, that kind of thing. And then at a certain point, mostly if you have enough privileges, frankly, you can start saying, well, actually, it's a more world-centric. And it can keep going beyond that. And all this is based on basic psychology, sociology, biology. None of this is really disputed, but this concept of spiral dynamics, to understand where people are coming from, I think is a very helpful, useful tool. It's sort of my secret weapon I don't always talk about it, but I tend to frame things in that way. So what's happening with did you want me to say around the left or the environment movement? The left. Sure. So here's what's happening. I do believe that aspects of the left are more of that world-centric view than just my group. So if you want to, it's very roughly can translate to Republican Democrat. Not always, not across the board, and for sure there's overlap. But let's just say that there's that element of if you're more group-centric, strong borders, America first, that's typically a Republican, a more conservative view to a certain degree. At a certain point, you start incorporating the different aspects. I'll get into that in a minute. Then you get into, well, you know what? There's a world out there, and people are suffering in those other countries, and maybe we have some stuff that we can help them out with. So we can't just think about my family, my town, my country. We got to think about the world, because if things are bad over there, then things are, you know, it may affect us anyway. So that's kind of a wider angle lens. Sometimes you should be looking at the other element. And you have to build it upon, no, I also love my group and I love my country. If you don't have that, then it's a dysfunctional kind of, if you're repressing that, it's dysfunctional. So what happens, a healthy left would be like, let's look at, inclusion or whatever, and let's bring folks into it. What ends up happening, though, that's still a limited lens. So there's no ability to actually come up with a solution. So I don't want to talk about immigration. I'm sorry I even brought up that topic, but I'm going to keep going on it. So the idea of like, well, that's why we have to have open borders forever. So is that really a genuine solution, even for those who care about everyone in the world? Could the whole world live in America, let's just say? I think the most bleeding heart leftists would be like, not everyone in the world can fit in America. So we've established that there is a limitation to that, right? The left doesn't really have any solutions to that issue that they care about, which is, say, immigration in this case. And I care about that too, and I think we do need to do something about that. There are a lot of people who are suffering. But at the same time, the idea of like, well, open borders forever, that's not really an answer. And neither is shut down the borders forever, no one can ever come into this country again. So those are both limited views. We get to a certain point where you can start saying, well, you know what? We got to have limits, but we should be expanding what our limits are. So that's starting to take on, you're beyond left and right there. You're kind of, it's what's called an integral view. So you're picking and choosing. It seems arbitrary, but you're basing it off of, well, I'm going to care about my family. I'm going to care about my country. I'm going to build it on that foundation. Then I'm going to expand beyond it. A lot of folks on the left are like, I don't give a shit about my country at all. That's not an actually healthy view. They repress that element of themselves. And what actually happens in a lot of the left is they are, a lot of the folks on the left are actually from an egocentric and a group-centric viewpoint, but are masquerading as this world-centric. So they're saying, well, I care about the whole world. That's why we have to do this sort of issue. But the reality is they don't. They care about themselves. They care about being right. They care about virtue signaling. It's actually not really coming from that higher level inclusion. It's masquerading that because that's becoming the mainstream. And there's a lot of folks who are just like fundamentalists, you know, about it. That's actually, so folks who are on the left who are basically, a lot of the folks who are into the cancel culture stuff, they're actually coming from a very similar psychological viewpoint as fundamentalist Christians. God said this, and that's how it is. So if you can talk to some folks on the left, and they're like that about certain topics, you know, this is how it is, and if you don't believe that, you are 100% wrong. In fact, you know, literally, well, not literally, but for them figuratively, it's like, you're going to hell. We're going to cancel you. You're trash forever. So that's a lot of what we're seeing. So that term that's been coined by sometimes conservatives, but the regressive left, it's accurate. That it's a regression. It's a devolution of those values, which are, in my opinion, the right values, the correct values, but they're limited in and of themselves. So hopefully that wasn't too complicated. I'm getting better at trying to communicate that complicated concept. I talk with people around the world. We have this weekly call on spiral dynamics, and this week we're going to be discussing Planet of the Humans and environmental movement through that lens. So that's probably enough, probably more than enough. But I think that once you look at that, a lot of the things that if you've looked into the left movement, which I know you folks have, a lot of this stuff is going to start coming out. You've already intuited it. You're already like, oh, okay, I thought there was something weird about that. That doesn't feel like the left that I used to know that, you know, attacked, you know, that went after corporations. Now they're like, yeah, you know what? Facebook gets to censor people. They're a corporation. The left is saying that? That's weird.
Yeah.
Will you be delving into that more in one of your episodes you said on your podcast?
I'm sure I will. Obviously, it's a bit dense, so I'll probably wait a while to subject an audience to that. I don't think I'm going to build an audience off of talking about that shit. But I do feel like it helped me understand what was going on with myself. Because I was like, I am still a hardcore environmentalist. In fact, I would argue I'm more hardcore. Yet here I am feeling alienated from the environmental movement. I'm not becoming more conservative. So what's going on here? It's because I started realizing there's another way of thinking about this.
Yeah. And I definitely appreciate sharing that. I mean, like me and Eduardo have had several episodes, and we disagree on some things. We both are for open borders, crisscrossing of workers anywhere they damn well want to please. So, I definitely know that I've trashed this country over and over again on this channel, and probably will continue to do so as a person who thinks the United States has to be torn down and rebuilt as a workers' commune. But but I will say that I do think the things you're saying about people looking more deeply into their own motives and particularly thinking that they're talking about everyone else, but actually really they're just talking about themselves. And just the notion of being able to hear other viewpoints. Yeah. If we don't do that, we won't change this world. We won't.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think there's any opinions that are wrong. I mean, maybe there's a few really harmful, hurtful ones, but the free expression of the ideas is the most important thing. And it's like, yeah, attack the argument, mm-hmm. not the person. So I'm all for deconstructing anyone's argument, including my own. But seeing, this is a saying that comes out in Spiral Dynamics. So Ken Wilber, I don't know if you've ever heard that guy, but he's a guy who made it a little bit more popular. But his saying is, what is it? It's everyone's right, but some people are more right than others. So, because even like the worst, like let's pick the worst. I'm going to just say horrible things here. I'm a Jew, so I can say this stuff. Like Nazis are wrong about almost everything. But if you're going to pretend that at 100%, not Hitler liked dogs, you know? So just because I like dogs doesn't make me a Nazi, you know? So it's like you can find one positive thing And from their viewpoint, you know, that's, you know, I'm not going to go more into the Nazi thing. I know no one wants that. But starting to look at it that way, no matter what somebody's saying, they're probably a little bit right. And that can really help with discourse. And I try to do that. I mean, the first thing we do when we disagree with somebody, you're like, oh, well, here's your bull crap. I'm going to tear it down. What's nice about writing is, like, you can write a response. You write the thing you don't like first, then go into the thing after you got that out. You're like, write it, then look at the thing and throw them a bone about the one nice thing. Then put that in the front of your email or your message. And then they're way more open to it because they should be more open to it because you've acknowledged that they have some validity. Almost every argument has some validity. The open borders argument has some validity. I think that there's another layer of discussion worth having around it. But having that, and who knows, maybe my mind would be changed about that, but having that discussion is the most important thing. And the left can't do it. There are certain two issues that I don't really talk about publicly because people can't have that conversation. It's anything right. that touches on racism or sexism.
Mm-hmm.
It's like people become incapable of having the discussion, or they're just—it's an easy. You can have an easy win. You just call somebody a sexist or racist. It doesn't affect me because I worked on anti-racism campaigns. I went door to door, knocking on door to door for stuff like that, asking for money. It's like I can guarantee most people who are anti-racism did not do that. So I'm not worried about that, you know. But I try to stay away from that. The reason I brought up immigration is just because, yeah, that's touching on the controversy, but it's a little bit safer.
Just like the population one. That's, I mean, Eduardo.
Yeah, it was just,
Eduardo got eaten alive by me and Kenny. Just we wouldn't get off of him on it.
But you see, Josh, that is what our intention here is at what's left. It's to be able to hold those discussions, the space for it, because. You just answered it. I was going to ask you. I was going to ask a follow up. What if you felt you couldn't say certain things because people will, what will they cancel you out? Is the millennial term, or will disavow you? Even now with this film, people are trying to disavow Michael Moore. People are demanding apologies. Well, I saw another thing where people were, it was just the uproar, you know, to cut off people, and that is almost the folks here on the left. We're almost disintegrating our own cause, our own movement, because we're not holding discussions. And do you find that the right possibly is holding those discussions, even though they're very, very, very controversial and yes, racist, but do they cancel themselves out in that sense, do you feel, or do you think that they make space for themselves on the right?
I think there's different elements of the right and that can be looked at in view of style dynamic stuff. There are folks on the right who are fundamentalists, who are, you know, group centric, who are ethnocentric. Some of them are racist. Some of them, like, that's this stage of evolution where they're like, my group, I'm white, we're the good ones. A lot of them are not actively racist, but then a fair amount really are. So there's that level of it. And then there are the folks who are kind of like more like the libertarian, who are like, I don't wish anyone any harm. You know, if there's a poor guy on the street, I don't wish him harm, but I'm not going to help him. So they haven't evolved to the point where they want to actually, they have that compassion and they don't have that inclusive enough lens. So there's a variety of folks on the right. But I would say, so the fundamentalist folks on the right, I mean, if you talk to them about abortion, they're going to be pretty similar to how a lot of the left is about certain issues. So, and if you talk to some very God-fearing people in the Midwest and you try to talk to them about atheism, they're not going to have any of that. But a lot of the right is actually more of that kind of rational discussion. So maybe they haven't gotten to the point where, like, yeah, we want to help people. Like, they don't have ill will towards people who are struggling in other countries, but they're now to the point where they actually want them to come into the country. Now, that's a more left evolved level of things, which I think is a positive, and you should want to help folks. The question is how best to help them, and that's another discussion. But because they're open to, you know, this logic, rational thing, they're more likely to be open to discussions and conversations, and less likely to be like, you're evil forever, you're out of this. Like, they like engaging. And what's funny is I found that even though when I was an actor in my activist days, like, every single one of my friends was like a far leftist. Over the last, you know, several years, I found more and more of my friends were kind of like more libertarians types. Even though I don't really share their values, I still have like what's, I call myself like a post-progressive. Like, I have encompassed all those progressive values, which some of my friends have not. But I can at least talk to them about critiquing these issues. I can at least have damn conversations with them without them thinking I'm evil or crying like a baby. So, but now I'm trying to seek out more folks who actually are more aligned to my values, but actually can handle these conversations, yeah, which is pretty damn rare, which is why I commented on your guys' video. I've looked at a lot of the commentary on this, and I don't comment on hardly any of it because I can tell that people are not actually open to any discussion. Yeah. Well, these guys actually are. I want to let them know that I thought that was cool.
Thank you. Yeah, that was it. Yeah, we appreciate that because it is challenging, as I think that mostly I, in last week's episode, was trying to, Andy, I was really struggling to find the words to say something that would be public forever.
Understandable.
So, you know, it's challenging. I was in a Bernie-crats here in San Francisco. I was in a Bernie-crats meeting, and I sometimes join discussions. I'm not necessarily a Bernie-crat member myself. I just wanted to join the discussion, and I said something along the lines: we need to recognize the racism that exists within all of us, and there was an African-American woman there, and she said, I'm not racist.
Right,
people
right.
of color are not racist. And I said, well, maybe you're not, if you don't think that, so that's fine, I respect that. But I don't know about people of color, because in my country, in Mexico, there's definitely lots of racism that exists, especially of immigrants towards folks crossing the border from the south. And now African immigrants that are coming from Ecuador, flying to Ecuador, and migrating up to Central America, and Mexicans, the things that I have said on video about African immigrants. It just, so the thing I'm trying to get at is that it's very, very challenging sometimes to hold these discussions because it's a very sensitive issue. They're sensitive topics. People have been hurt. People have been exploited. People have been, are oppressed. So how do we hold those conversations on the left? I think it's important that we try.
Right. I mean, it's done very carefully, as you have tried to do, as I've tried to do. Like I said, I'm not even going to comment on what you said, because but here's the way we do it. I can talk about Jew stuff because I'm a Jew. No one can touch me. No one's going to call. I guess they can call me a self-hating Jew, but like, good luck with that. So I can talk about stuff like that. I can critique the environmental movement, because if somebody comes after me, Josh Schlossberg is an anti-environmentalist, just take a look at my track record, and you can say what you want about me,
right,
but my track record is pretty pro-environmental. So maybe those of us who are protected by our identities in those realms, we're the ones who can talk about that stuff. I can talk about anti-Semitism and maybe some of the situations in which it's not anti-Semitism or whatever. You know, I'm not going to talk much about feminism. I have my opinions about that. I'm not going to talk much about racism. You know, I mentioned immigration. That's basically as far as I'll even go, because I think at least I'm pro-immigration. So, you know, at least that's safe. But then if I were to have any critique about, oh, there were some environmental issues around it, that gets into dangerous territory. Or if you say something like, well, I am so for making other countries good, that I want, I hope that folks who are really go-getters in those countries help improve their countries. Because if other countries are falling apart, then that's bad for that country and the whole world. So that gets into a whole other discussion. But we can talk about all of these things. You know, we can be pro-immigration, so say, okay, well, what? Just ask questions about this. Maybe our views change over time. Maybe I'm convinced. Maybe at the end of talking to folks, it's like I have a completely different view. And the reason I keep talking about the immigration thing is because it's so controversial. It's uncomfortable for me to even talk about it. That I want to at least venture into some of those danger realms without going very far. This is why I won't talk about, like, sexism and racism stuff very much. But whereas you might be able to talk about certain things that I can't. So you would be the emissary for that, because you are I because if somebody tries to say, oh, you're prejudiced in this way, it's not gonna really hold a lot of water, because you can utilize your identity. You're way more than your identity, but it protects you from just that attempt, which a lot of times is not legitimate. It's not that they actually would think that therefore you're racist. They're like, I can say this because I know it will shut them down, because nobody wants to really be racist.
I mean, look at what Jeff Gibbs went through. I mean, he is being called almost a eugenics being aligned with that.
Which he never even advocates for a second. And I know for a fact that he is dyed-in-the-wool, you know, helping, he used to do social work, working primarily with, you know, low-income communities of color. It's like he actually did the work. He's just built upon these other things and realizing, well, that's a little bit of the issue, you know, his population. But yeah, it's certainly not saying that it's the developing world's fault. And the film doesn't say that. But I think that gets into this Rorschach blot that is this film and lots of other things. You can read whatever message you want into stuff, whether it's there or not. So people are like, it mentions population. He wants to kill all, you know, people in India. And it's like, why does your mind is going there? You know, it's like, that's your projection if you're thinking that. It brings all this other stuff into it, and it's both interesting and disturbing, because when those critiques are made to silence, and that's what most of the critiques are on the left, it's not about how do we have a discussion. Mm-hmm. It's about how do we end the discussion. And because the folks have been trying to prevent this film from being shown, that was the first thing that they did, was try to go after what they called a distributor, but it was actually just a website that also showed the film without Jeff Gibbs' permission. And then they wanted an apology for them. And it's like, what are you even talking about?
Yeah. Did you all want to ask
Kenny, were you going to say anything or ask anything? Or?
I think you addressed my point.
I think maybe first I'll just summarize with the, I do think it's a problem on the left if, as a result of identity politics, men and women cannot discuss sexism, or it's a problem on the left if workers of different colors cannot get together and talk about racism. That is a problem, and that is a problem we do have. And I think identity politics very much is at the root at it, and it's like a heat-seeking missile for our movement, and it's doing a lot of damage.
And which isn't to say that there aren't good things about identity politics, because there are some good things about it. I mean, there's a time and a place for that. The civil rights movement was identity politics to a certain degree. There's, of course, the argument that today's social justice aspects of that is continuing, like Martin Luther King's mission. Some folks suggest it's actually not. And, you know, all I'll say about that is, can we cure racism with more racism? You know, can we cure sexism with more sexism? Personally, I'm not of the belief that we can. But I'm going to focus on the environmental stuff, but I don't want it to exist in a box, because those topics are very, very important. And maybe people who are braver than me I've written some articles that touch on this stuff, but you can't really. It's very dangerous. Let's just say, as a white-looking guy like me, and I shave my head, so I'm obviously a Nazi skinhead who's also a Jew. So you figure that one out. But no one has actually accused me of that. So I think sometimes we get extra sensitive about that. I think in some circles we can have these conversations, but they are dangerous because people who are not arguing in good faith for sure will use that to shut people down. I think the key is we have to not be afraid of that happening. I'm afraid of it happening. I try to push my own envelope sometimes, but it's some scary shit because it's like if you dedicated your life to an issue, you know, like anti-racism, and then you're like, well, maybe sometimes this, and then the people are like, well, you're a racist. Like, that fucking hurts, you know. It really hurts. Not just, oh, somebody will think I'm racist, which also is legitimate because if your circle is all folks in the left like mine is, any critique like that, I've not been critiqued for racism or sexism, but I will give one example of why I don't even have these conversations. I put something on a Facebook page because I try to engage folks on the left from some of the stuff that I'm talking about. It's like, well, maybe there's another way to think of this, but I try to do it gently sometimes. And I posted something about, I don't remember, I mentioned the term patriarchy theory. So I've actually come from a lot of feminist background. I'm fairly well read in it. I was a part of eco-feminist organizations, all that sort of stuff. And the term is called, it's called patriarchy theory. It's like the term germ theory. Like that's the academic phrasing of it. I just mentioned that in passing. The thing wasn't even a critique of feminism. I just, the patriarchy theory. And then somebody who, she was a feminist, but frankly, not very well-read feminist, she's like, well, I look forward to living in a world where men don't think that patriarchy is a theory. And it's like, well, first of all, everything is a theory, you know, whatever. But it's like, no, I was using the legitimate term, and you'd be like, well, so what? So what? Well, then a bunch of other people jumped on her comment and were like, yeah! And then I was like, how far am I from being called a sexist here for actually using the correct term? But because I was like, because I'm a dude, I'm not even going to touch this topic anymore. I have stuff to say about it. I have stuff to say that I think can help women, that can help advance feminism. I don't talk about it because I can't, because of what happened in that. Because all somebody has to do is look at it and be like, oh, well, somebody's calling him a sexist. Nobody called him a sexist, mind you, but that's where it could have gone. And then they go like, well, I don't want to have anything to do with him. I'm not going to let him, you know, I'm not going to publish his articles. I'm going to, you know, erase this. Or even some people are like, okay, I know Josh is not a sexist at all, but people think he is, so I still have to keep my distance. So it's used as a weapon, and I don't think that really advances us, and that is the left eating the left, and I do think that was partially responsible for Trump's election, and, you know, depending on how many grandparents die over the next, you know, 6 months, it may be what gets him reelected again.
Or I just, you know, just being part of the community, San Francisco, you know, sort of the, you know, epicenter somewhat, or at least some people think of, you know, progressive values. You know, I identify with you that, you know, in some ways I have to insulate myself through my work. I've used that as my evidence because I've been accused, for example, you know, I don't have the platform that you do, but, you know, the level. However, so I've been accused of being transphobic, for example, even though I've done that. I work with, you know, transsexual people, asylum seekers and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was accused because of one incident where I had to draw boundaries, you know, where we had to be professional, you know, versus, you know, intimate. And obviously there are power dynamics when you're interacting with people with a lot of trauma. Yes. So that incident could have gone really bad and canceled me out from the community. And, right. and but what helped was a person, part of that community, knew me personally, knew my work, and they immediately dismissed that and squashed that. But it is a dangerous, you know, there's a lot of landmines that you can potentially land on. And, you know, now, like, I am more, like, radical left here. Sometimes I feel isolated because people don't want to engage in conversations with me because they know that I will challenge their worldview of the Democratic Republican binary, for example.
Right.
And so, but yeah, I'm navigating that. So it's very interesting to hear you speak about, you know, your ideas, and especially this fundamentalist mindset. I think that that's the thing that I will take away from, you know, out of many things.
Sure.
But that, you know, that's something that I've been wrestling with in terms of, like, I don't believe that the left is that different than the right in that sense, you know, that it's us versus them, you know, and if you disagree with us, it's kind of like a religious cult, right? Like, if you don't agree with us, then you're out and you know, you're evil, you're the devil, and you must be extricated from the group. So, but it is a difficult thing, and it is something that I'm hoping to push as I do more and more work, you know, and let my work speak for itself. And be able to speak to other things and have those spaces where we can, you know, have these conversations and challenge, you know, mainstream ideology and hopefully change things. But it is hard because you are dealing with psychology, right? And in a particular frame of understanding the world. And that's something you can destroy it, you know, from one day to another. It's a slow process and it's hard. So, yeah, just wanted to comment on that I do, you know, I think locally in San Francisco, they're, you know, somewhat on the moral high ground because they have, like you said, this worldview that's more inclusive.
Yeah.
They don't realize, for example, sometimes when I advocate that or I say, you know, say a statement along the lines of, you know, in the last 30 years since NAFTA, white workers have been the most economically abused.
Mm.
And so they're in shock, you know, but, you know, because they're saying that a person of color advocating for white working, you know, poor white working class.
Right. Okay.
But that's the job that you said people like me have to do because if, for example, Lipson, you know, he can be easily be dismissed as, you know, it's just a white guy speaking from his point of privilege.
Yep.
So, yeah. So I do see the value in, you know, having to do the work to, you know, insulate yourself and advocate for deconstructing some of these, you know, framework. But just a comment, sorry.
Yeah, no, that's great. Well, because there's so many of us that think this way. You know, we don't have to align on every point. It's just we want to improve our movements. And there's a lot of folks who are, you know, left out, you know, folks who they're left behind, you know, however you want to phrase that. And they think that they're conservatives, but they're actually not. So in my mind, it's about, no, it's okay. You can be somewhat heretical and question these movements, actually to even advance them. There's not a movement that I support that I don't also critique. Like, that is my form of support. You know, ex-girlfriends have had an issue with that. And it's not always appropriate interpersonally. But the movement, it's, to me, that's true love of it. You know, it's like, you know, I care about this issue. That's why I want to see it work. You know, I care about people in other countries. I want to see immigration that works. Like, I want to see people be helped and make it work for as many people as possible. I don't want to just rest on my feelings and be like, well, I feel pure about this, so therefore it's good. It's like, well, that's a good step, but I would rather make sure that I'm helping people. And so, yeah, you can't talk about certain issues, but we might be protected based on our identities. You know, the best advocates for men right now are women. Those are the ones. Those are the best ones.
I think maybe we'll just try one question. It's a very general question because I actually partly feel like we should wrap up on what you just said, but I'm going to throw this out here because we talk about reform and revolution on this show, capitalism and socialism.
Yeah.
And maybe if you want to speak to any of those ideas, what they mean to you, you know, as kind of the last part of talking about just sort of your beliefs.
Yeah. I want to add to that question, you know, a little more precise. You know, can environmentalism live with capitalism?
I can talk to all that. Well, I mean, it'll be limited because my knowledge of all these things is not as in-depth as your all's. I think capitalism is flawed, potentially fatally flawed. Maybe it can't work. But at the same time, we have to acknowledge that it has raised a lot of people out of poverty. So I'm not saying that that's the only way to get people out of poverty. But I'm saying that to have a legitimate critique of stuff, we have to acknowledge some of the stuff that's worked. I think a lot of our governments economies are kind of hybrid anyway, right? It's not pure socialism, that's for sure, but there are elements of it. I do think that this pandemic is showing that in certain times, more leaning in that direction is probably going to be more and more necessary. I think that's probably the way things are evolving. I don't think there's ever going to be a pure economic system one way or another, but I think that there'll likely be a hybridization more towards that socialist component. And right now, during this pandemic, is a perfect example of that. And it's almost like, well, maybe it just makes sense to give some people some money right now. Maybe that just makes the most sense. And you know, like the UBI concept. I am not an economist. I am not knowledgeable enough to really speak in depth about all that stuff. That's not really my wheelhouse. But I do think anything that is an infinite expansion. So I think socialism can be done in a way that is ecologically devastating as well. I think it's more of a model that would be protective of that because there can be more limits. But if it's about infinite expansion, then, you know, that's an issue. So capitalism, because of that infinite expansion, it can't be in its current form. It's not sustainable. It is anti-environmental. A more socialist perspective might work better. I do think that the human appetite does need to be taken into account. So I think even in a socialist system, if people have certain demands of things that are more than a finite resource of a planet can provide, that's still a limitation. But I think there are more stopgap measures in that system that would work better. So that's my kind of weaselly way of answering that question. But in terms of, and my views can evolve on that, because that's definitely a topic that I'm not as familiar with. A steady state economy is the closest I would have to how we would move forward on that, and that's, you know, trying to maintain an equilibrium rather than a constant expansion. But I do think, you know, looking at why these economic systems, yes, they're giving us stuff that we don't need and they're forcing stuff on us, but I also think to a certain degree they're giving us what a lot of us think we want. So I think that has to be addressed. But in terms of reform versus revolution, I mean, as a macro, I don't know, but I think in certain situations, certain things in our world need to be burned to the ground, and other things probably should be the foundation. Maybe we tear off the roof and we keep the foundation in the basement because that's decent. Other things probably are working really well as they are. So I think it really depends on what you're talking about. In terms of, I guess an analogy I would use is like, if it's about a revolution, it's like, let's say I don't like the house I'm living in and I want to live in another house. Well, I'm going to start building that house, or at least have some blueprints before I tear down the house I'm living in, because the winter's coming and I'll die if I don't have a new house, you know, for the winter. So I think some of the just tear all the system down without at least having a bit more of a kernel of something that works. So a lot of just taking away from this issue, because I don't know as much, let's just say hippie communes, right? It's like, well, how about we do one fucking hippie commune that actually works? And then we can talk about having a whole country like that. And that's not like a comment on socialism. That's just one aspect of hippie dream. It's like, couldn't even do that with four people. You wouldn't do it with 260 million.
It'll work better with 4 million.
Right? Could be. But you know what I'm saying? It's like, so let's create these little models of what we want. And I know folks have been doing that. And I know folks who are in the socialist movement who do have lots of plans for that. But that's just my thing is like, okay, what's that better plan? Where is evidence of where it's been working? And let's build it upon that kernel. And this can maybe come around to the whole environmental thing. It's like, I've been a long time critiquer, is that a word? Critic? Oh, yeah. Critic of the mainstream environmental movement, right? But it's not enough to just complain about what they're doing wrong. It's like, what is the better version of the environmental movement? So Planet of the Humans is not coming up with the solutions. I don't think it's meant to. It's passing the baton. It's like, here's the baton. We've reframed the problem. Who's going to take the baton? The mainstream environmental movement has been like critiquing how the baton has been passed and dropped the baton. You didn't run fast enough. They're not interested in taking the baton. They're over. They're irrelevant. We're still going to hear about them because they have the money and the funding. They're done. The folks who I'm interested in are the ones who are like, okay, now that we better understand the problem, how are we going to move forward with a different way? So I think folks who are trying to do that for economic systems, like you guys are doing, that's super important. And we do all, maybe we focus on our little, you know, part of the elephant or whatever, but we do need to all be in communication. And like, if I'm working on environmental stuff, I want to check in. How are the folks who are talking about the, you know, the economic stuff of capitalism versus socialism, reform versus revolution? What are they coming up with? How can they influence what we're doing? More like, what are those interconnections between those aspects? And maybe we'll be moving forward, at least in a general, similar direction. It doesn't have to be exact. That's how I see that.
That works for me.
We're done.
All right. So I guess that's it then. No, Josh? Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Josh.
Thank you. Yeah, it really is very – we really appreciate you, Josh, for coming on as a guest. We so appreciated that you appreciated us for the discussion that we had on this very – just tenuous conversation that's happening out in the media. All right, so this concludes our episode. So let's, again, this is Josh, help me here, Schlossberg?
Yeah.
All right. So again, Josh Schlossberg is a writer, investigative journalist, and recovering activist hiding out in the foothills of the Colorado Rockies. He's got a brand new podcast, and it's called the Green Root Podcast, where he invites you to join him on his quest to uncover the root of the modern ecological crisis. And we will link that in the episode notes, Josh.
Okay.
Thank you, Josh.
So, is there anything else you want to promote, or if
that was do you want to say something else, Josh?
No, I don't need to promote anything else. I'm just really glad you guys had me on. I'm really glad that y'all are having these discussions. It's so important. And even though we're called, you know, we're seen by folks inside the mainstream left as they don't know what to make of us. And anyone who thinks that the critique of a movement that you love equals being against it, you know, I just those are not people I even want to engage with anymore. It's just a waste of time.
Yeah.
It's nice to see folks who are, I don't even care if I agree with you on 1% of the issue. I mean, we more, but it's how we go about the discussion and the intellectual curiosity. You guys are doing it. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
What's Left is a weekly political / channel challenging the mainstream left. We post information about our topics and our guests on the episode notes wherever you found this episode or on our blog, what-s-left.webnode.com. You can find past episodes to this podcast / channel there and connect with us. I remind folks, if you like anything you have heard, please share your favorite episode, rate, review, and subscribe to any of our 5 platforms on iTunes, Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, BitChute, or YouTube. And if you would like to give us feedback about something you've heard or suggest something for us to cover, contact us through our blog. I'm Eduardo Barca with co-hosts Andy Lipson and Kenny Cepeda. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Josh.
Thank you.
Thank you.